This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Secret of the Laurel Crown, and the author is Andrea McVicker. And Andrea joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Westbow Press. Hello, Andrea.
Hello, how are you?
Well, this is a mystery thriller. I call it an epic because it's one of those, I guess, like the secrets of or the Chronicles of Narnia or the Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. Those kind of were your inspiration, would you say?
Very much so. In fact, Madeline Engel, which is a favorite author of mine, wrote A Wrinkle in Time, and so I felt that I wanted to write a book many years ago, very much in keeping with her fine writing, and so that's how I really came around with writing for young adults, middle school to young adults, an epic. I'm glad that you call it a lot epic. I'm very flattered that you do so. It is going to be a series, and so this is my very first book in the series, Secret of the Laurel Crown.
Well, here's a little glimpse of the book, just a thumbnail sketch, if you will. Secret of the Laurel Crown presents a 13-year-old girl who fights against a giant named Gog, battles evil, and wins. Yet she is an ordinary girl, and as such, she must battle to overcome her fears and guilt as well. Of course, this all takes place on a planet of double suns. You know, it's just around the corner.
Right.
You know, and of course, her brother's involved, her 15-year-old brother, Jimmy, and then she's got some friends with her, and they're battling the evil power. Now, is that Mauvis?
No, Mauve.
Mauve.
Mauve, yeah.
The evil power of Mauve and King Bal.
Correct, correct.
They sound very unfriendly.
Yes, they are. They are. In fact, Carolyn battles on several levels. She battles her own fears and guilt because, you see, what brought her to Double Sons was her guilt in believing that she caused an accident that killed her parents and put herself in the hospital and then forced she and her brother Jimmy to live with Graham. They had to move from Seattle to Detroit. And so with Graham's rules and her dislike of school and the problems that that whole family, her grandmother and she and her brother share, she would do anything to escape her life as she was so unhappy and as she was living it. And so her grandmother, in order to cheer up Carolyn, finds in a garage sale a puzzle. But the puzzle has no picture. So she and Jimmy put together this puzzle. And in this puzzle is locked a young woman who is dressed in a beautiful ballerina costume and so on. She's imprisoned in this puzzle. And when they put this puzzle together, they release this imprisoned character called Gazelia. And it's Gazelia who takes Carolyn and Jimmy to the land of double sons, because Carolyn is so happy to be free of her circumstances, except she finds herself in other circumstances in which she has to unlock a gift, which is a golden crown in the shape of a laurel leaf. And in that crown, there are instructions for her to actually battle Gog and the evil powers, along with Jimmy as well. So it's a very exciting adventure fantasy as her, the mystery of trying to find the key to unlock the powers that will give both she and Jimmy victory over King Bale, Mauve, and the circumstances that they find themselves in on the planet of Double Suns.
Everyone, we are about to gaze into the mind of Andrea. How in the world did you come up with this idea?
Well, it's very interesting. I was taking a lot of writing courses in 1978, and I was doing short stories, and I had published poetry and so on, and I won a scholarship to a writer-in-residence program in Bloomfield Hills in Detroit, and there I met Joyce Carol Oates. She was one of the instructors, and I decided I wanted to write a book. I had no idea what that book was going to be about, but I thought about writing a book. And so at that time in my life, I liked doing puzzles. And so I put together a puzzle of a young woman in an arabesque in a beautiful ballerina costume. And I wondered who she was. Who was this lady in this puzzle? And I thought about it and thought about it, and it came to me her name. Her name was Gazelia. And so I thought, well, that would be an interesting character in a book. And so as I thought about the book, I started writing notes. That was in 1981, and thought about a plot line. And I know that some authors work by an outline, but I was working through the character of Gazelia, who didn't turn out to be the main protagonist, Carolyn. Gazelia led me to Carolyn, and Carolyn and Jimmy, and the circumstances of Carolyn, so then Carolyn became the main protagonist. And from there, I wrote certain outlines, plot lines, and through the years worked on the book a number of times. I think I've rewritten this book a zillion times and through the years. And so that was the germ of the idea and how it started all those years ago.
You also say that fortunately in our culture today, young girls have more opportunities to break out of the old stereotypic ideas based on a woman's place is walking three steps behind a man.
Correct.
So you kind of make, you know, that was in the back of your mind as well?
Yes, it was. All of the adventure fantasy books that I read, excuse me, in order to have a sense of the genre that I was choosing, I wanted it to, I wanted to the book to appeal to middle school, to young adults. And I was working in the church, and I saw that all of the fantasy books had, and even today when you think about Harry Potter, they were males. They, even Tales of Narnia, they were males. They were the ones who were the heroes. And I wanted to make my hero an ordinary girl who, in fact, in a situation, in a supernatural situation, would also become the hero, the victor, the one who was doing the battles, as opposed to being the one who was in the background helping the hero, who is generally the male protagonist, have the victory. So I wanted to make a young girl the victory hero. And so that's why I wrote it that way, because of the way, but excuse me, because of the way that our culture was at that time, and even today, I think many of the adventure fantasy books that you can go to, young people are reading those kind of books, but I think of Harry Potter, the main protagonist is a young man, a boy. And so I wanted to make the main protagonist a girl.
An ordinary girl doing extraordinary things, that's
correct.
For sure.
An ordinary girl doing extraordinary things, yes, thank you. That's exactly what I had in mind.
And you also say, I love a good, clean, exciting read. And I emphasize clean?
Yes, very. Someone asked me, and I happened to mention Harry Potter, is this a book like Harry Potter? And it isn't. Secret of the Laurel Crown is not dark. It's inspirational. It's uplifting. It's exciting. And it is a good, clean read. I think whether you're a middle schooler or a young adult or even an adult, I have had a lot of adults come and say they really enjoyed the book. It's a good, clean read, yes.
So readers of both sexes like the book?
Yes, because also young men like the book, boys like the book, because Jimmy is 15 years old. He's 2 years older than Carolyn, so they have this adventure together. So it's a good read for a young man. It's a good read for a young lady.
Now, you have a Greek phrase that you use?
Yes, love conquers all things. And
how does that pronounced in the Greek phrase?
Agape nikai panta.
That's beautiful.
And it means love conquers all things, and all things include death, because this is a book about love conquering death and restoring, redeeming relationships. It's really a book about love and how love is the most important thing in one's life. And Carolyn begins to discover this through a series of adventures, because she and her brother, they don't get along. They don't get along at all. They have problems. And, of course, the issue that she has with her own fears and guilt in the book. So it's a book we can all relate to, because we have those same fears and guilt and difficulties and challenges in life.
Now, we have Gog, who's a giant, the evil giant. We also have Mave, and you describe, is it her? Is Mave a her?
Yes, Mave.
Or an it.
Her. Mave is both an evil ruler, and Gog is Mave's champion.
Ah.
Mave rules the planet of double suns. And
you describe her as a sci-fi machine-generated hydra. Now, what is that?
That's what she turns into, because she comes across as a beautiful ruler. She comes across as very appealing. She comes across as very lovely. In fact, she is like a goddess.
Sounds like politics in the United States.
Planet. I'm sorry.
It sounds like politics in the United States.
It does indeed. It does indeed. And so Gog is Mauve's champion. And so they morph into, they shapeshift into these different descriptive characterizations as Carolyn is using the directive from the crown to show her how to battle these two entities. So it's a modern adventure fantasy, because we have a computer, we have it's technologically into here and now, as well as being on another planet in outer space.
And you're trying to dispel, as you put it, the propaganda ideology of the world that says fame, money, and pleasure will satisfy the longings of our souls.
Correct. Well, you see, that's what Carolyn is hoping for. Carolyn wants to get out of the impoverished situation in which she finds herself, and living with Jimmy and her grandmother, and all the rules and regulations and schools, school that she's in, and the situation that she's in. And she thinks if she can just become famous, if she can just become rich, if somehow she could escape the environment that she's in, she would be happy. And she discovers when she goes to the planet of double suns that this is presented to her. However, in doing so, she's binding herself to a situation in which she must acquiesce to Mauve, who's very beautiful and offers her all this incentive of a new life, but she finds herself in bondage. And it is the crown that rescues her. So she's rescued on many different levels as she works through her guilt and fear, and finds and discovers that fame and riches and fortune, which she is offered, will not satisfy her, because there's no love involved in this situation at all.
And she also discovers that she can become courageous if she understands that she is loved.
Yes, correct. And it is love that is the incentive for her to reconcile with her brother, and also to overcome the incentives that she's also getting for a completely different lifestyle, which will throw her into a type of bondage of fame and riches and so on, in which it is empty of love. So she goes through this whole process of discovering that love is the ultimate desire of her heart, as it is true for all of us.
So it's the struggle to, I guess, have this power of the laurel crown. Of course, Mave and King Baal want it, and Carolyn and Jimmy and what's her name?
Gazelia
are trying to protect it and use it for good.
Correct. Exactly. And so it is always true that self-sacrificing love is the ultimate goal without us realizing that that is what will give us satisfaction and happiness, rather than the things we pursue so often, unfortunately, in our own lives, which is security through financial, economic, being appreciated and loved for our abilities and talents. It's really love that we're all seeking. We are all seeking that. Unknowing to Carolyn, this is what she needs. She just doesn't know that she needs it. And so it is for her self-discovery through unlocking the secret of the laurel crown that not only does her brother love her, but that she loves her brother, and that the life that she wanted to escape was the life that would give her the love that she needs.
The title of the book, Secret of the Laurel Crown, the author is Andrea McVicker. And Andrea, tell us how to get your book.
Oh, my goodness. I'd be so happy to tell you that. You can Google Yahoo, Secret of the Laurel Crown, and it will come up in various ways. You can buy it at Barnes & Noble. You can also buy it through the e-books. You can buy it through Westbow. There's a number of ways that you can buy the book, and I'm very excited. We're going to have a book released right here in Coral Springs, and if anybody's in around the South Florida area, Coral Springs is very near Fort Lauderdale. We invite you to come to our regional library. There's a book release there, and we're going to have a celebration December the 3rd at 3:30 in the afternoon. Refreshments will be served, and you can even question the author even more about how she wrote the book, and you can meet her in person. We'd be very happy to have you come. But you can Yahoo, Google, and all of the information is very easy to get it through Westbow, ebooks, Amazon.com, and of course Barnes & Noble, and all of the bookstores will have it.
Thank you, Andrea. Thanks for being with us on Indie Book Publishing. This interview brought to everyone by Westbow Press. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Get ready to live La Bella Vita with Dawn Catherine on TogiNet.com. Live La Bella Vita. If you're wanting to know all the beauty tricks of the trade and the latest fashion trends before everyone else, this is your show. If you admire celebrities' beauty and their fashion sense, this is your show. Do you love wine and want to know more about the process it takes to make wine from the vine to the bottle? This is your show. Live La Bella Vita. For more on the show and your host, check out our website, LaBellaVitaCosmetico.com. This is the kind of show you can sink your teeth into. If you enjoy traveling and food and family, all with an Italian flair, then you can live La Bella Vita with your host, Dawn Catherine. Wednesday nights at midnight, 11 p.m. Central on TogiNet.com.
Mark Lipinski is coming to TogiNet. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski, a live two-hour show Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on TogiNet.com. Creative Mojo. It's fun, entertaining, informative, inspirational, and illuminating. Lipinski has worked on such shows as Oprah, The View, The Joan Rivers Show, and Ricky Lake. He's busy, but he's got the drive to share with Creative Mojo, dedicated to the modern crafter and crafting lifestyle. Dive into the info and enjoy everything from celebs to entertainment news to recipes, quilting and needlework, knitting, painting, woodworking, Christmas crafts, and so much more. This show boldly encourages you to discover and harness your own creative spirit by living creatively every day. For more on Mark and the show, check out marklipinski.com. Don't miss the fun. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski, Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on toginet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Bite-Sized Prayers, Non-Denominational Morsels to Feed Your Soul. And the author is Norma Jean Strickland. And Norma Jean joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Balboa Press. Hello, Norma Jean.
Hi, Steve. It's just great to be here with you. I'm thrilled at this opportunity, and I'm delighted that you have already looked at a copy of the book and have some favorable comments. That means the world to me, so thank you.
Well, it's very unique. It's a much different book about prayer that I've ever seen, so I would highly recommend that everyone take a serious look at this and put it on your list for Christmas. It sounds like the perfect gift for Christmas. So
I think it's a perfect gift book, and it doesn't really matter what holiday you celebrate. I mean, it could be a birthday or Valentine's Day, but the holidays are coming soon, so it seems to be perfect timing. But I'm also thinking of this as a coffee table book. It's not just a book that you want to leave on your shelf, because I took all the photographs in the book. I've done a little bit of world traveling, and I always have a camera in my hand, so you have to get pictures when you're there while it's happening. So.
Well, we'll talk about those pictures, and we'll talk about these anagrams. I want to read just a couple of things just to give everyone a general overview of the whole message of the book. You say this: do you know how to pray? Are you too busy to pray? Have you forgotten how to pray? Life today is full and busy, so people constantly look for quick and easy ways to get their needs met. Bite-sized prayers, non-denominational morsels to feed your soul, is a small book that provides a unique perspective on how to pray. Each prayer is only one word, but with a twist. The word itself has become an actual prayer written in anagram form. So, for example, give us just one, like about the first one, angels.
Okay, yes. Angels, if you spell it and put the letters straight up and down, it's A-N-G-E-L-S. And so I wrote, always near God, every last soul. And that's how each word prayer in the book is crafted, so that, again, each prayer is one word, and the words are expressive of that concept. So here's another one that I really like. The one for love, of course, everybody in the world wants to give and receive love, and you spell it L-O-V-E. And what I wrote was, let other views express. And then the photograph that I have along with that word is just a pile of rocks that I saw on the beach one afternoon, and it's just perfect because it's, you can think of it as a collection of different people all together, and they're all just expressing who they are. So I did have a method to my madness. There are specific reasons why I chose the photographs to go with each word.
Does prayer have to be religious?
No, not at all. Not in my mind. And I think that's the biggest misconception about prayer that people have. There's a very famous quotation, and I might not get it verbatim, but Meister Eckhart said that if the only prayer you ever said in your whole life was thank you, that would be enough. And I completely agree. You don't have to be in a formal place to utter a prayer. You just have to say something from your heart. Because spirit isn't limited to a building anywhere. Spirit is everywhere you look. It's in us and through us. It's expressing as us. And prayer is easy. And you don't need somebody else to tell you how to pray. You can just pray yourself just by closing your eyes and going within and just even calming down and taking a few deep breaths and just being quiet. Even that in and of itself is enough to be a prayer. I believe that prayer is restorative. And that was another reason that I chose the specific photographs that I did that I've scattered throughout the book, because they're all nature photographs. And we love to go and wander out in nature because it does restore the soul. It makes us feel better when we actually walk barefooted and go down a trail or a path somewhere where we can just be one with nature and one with all that is. And that's really the essence of spirit. So that's why I approached this book the way I did.
Well, these anagrams are listed alphabetically. You start out with angels. You end with the word yes. And some of them, angels, aware, beauty, being, change, comfort, create, cry. It's obviously words that create a feeling, right?
Oh, yes. I love the one for cry, because it's just perfect. I mean, all of us have experienced crying in different ways. I mean, you can cry for joy and you can cry for sadness. But either way, your tears have to come out. And so to spell the word is C-R-Y, and what I wrote was catharsis reaches you. And I think it's so true. And there's a similar one in the back for the word weep, W-E-E-P. And what I wrote was, weeping enables eventual peace. And it's so true. We all feel better once we get those feelings out. But you do have to feel what you're feeling. That's part of life. And it's also part of being one with spirit and part of saying a prayer. You just have to feel what you're feeling in your heart.
What's so unique about your book is that when you are leafing through it, obviously you're seeing these anagrams in a vertical spelling, and you see this wonderful photograph, and it just stops you and causes you to think and to feel. It's a great experience.
Oh, I'm so glad you feel that way, Steve. Thank you very much. Here's another one that I really love. The word for now, N-O-W, nothing outlasts wonder.
And what photograph?
I have a photograph of an exquisite sunset that I captured years ago driving up the central coast of California. And I should probably tell the listeners how this book came to be. It was most unexpected on my part. One morning last December, I awoke from a dream, a disembodied voice dream that simply said, the words will come, write them down. And they did. And so I wrote them down. So I really feel like this is a gift from spirit to me to come through and be a gift to others, because it really is quite insightful. And I can say that only because I didn't really write it. It actually did come through me, and it's very humbling and such a wonderful experience. It's difficult to describe, but if you're a creative person and you're involved in the creative process, you know what I mean. You just kind of have to get out of your own way and let whatever wants to be expressed come through you. And so this has been a fabulous experience for me, and I'm deeply grateful.
One of your reviewers...
I'm really pleased with the way it turned out, too, so...
Oh, definitely, definitely. One of your reviewers says, every now and then, a book comes around that is deeply rooted in the fundamental principles of sharing love, compassion, and an inspired understanding of true human nature. Norma Jean Strickland has done just that with her beautiful new book, Bite-Sized Prayers, Non-Denominational Morsels to Feed Your Soul. Read this book every day and feed your soul with the inspiration that will make each day a great day. Exclamation point.
Yes.
Well, there's other ones like divine, dream, fear, flow, fun, genius, grace, grief, grow. You can see how they're all alphabetical and just some great words that causes you to think, I wonder what she did with those. Give us a couple more examples.
Okay. Here's one. Whisper. WHISPER. What happens in stillness prepares each remembrance. In other words, if you go inside and just commune with the silence, then you can really remember who you are, which is pure spirit. And, you know, we're all on this journey together, and that's another reason I fashioned the book the way I did, because it's really appropriate for anyone anywhere throughout the world who speaks English. It's not appropriate for translation just because of the way the words are crafted. But for anyone who speaks English, it really is a way to express our shared human condition. We all feel the same things. We all want the same things. And it's our feelings that unite us. It doesn't matter what culture we come from. We're all spirit having a human experience.
That's right. There's laugh, so, life, light, listen, losses, love, mercy, music. The list goes on and on throughout the alphabet. Share another one with us.
Okay, let's see. I love these two, and they're next to each other alphabetically. The word for sweet is S-W-E-E-T, somewhere everything embraces truth. And then the one that's right next to it is the word for thanks, T-H-A-N-K-S, to have all needs kindly supplied. And for that one, I have a picture of a hawk. It was just a wonderful afternoon. This hawk and I spent about an hour together looking at each other in a garden up in Malibu at one of the meditation gardens at the Sarah Retreat. And it was a fabulous afternoon, and I just love this photograph because it's so expressive.
You also say taking time to pray allows you to get still long enough to hear the guidance you're being given.
Yes, yes. You know, we're bombarded with We're bombarded with technology everywhere we turn. And I love technology, and it's a fact of life, and it's here to stay. But you also need balance in your life, and you need to know when to turn everything off, because otherwise all you're going to hear is the television and the music and the cell phone and the internet and everything else. So you just have to turn everything off for a little while in order to hear the stillness of your own being. And that's a gift that you can give to yourself. It's really important.
And prayer, as you put it, is intensely personal.
It is. It is. Nobody can experience your inner life for you except you. You're the one inside your body. You're the one having your own thoughts. And you alone know what your heart's desires are. So, you know, one of the greatest directives is ask and it shall be given, seek and you shall find. Well, when you go inside to the stillness of who you really are, that's where you can ask for your heart's desires. Spirit is always present, and it will never intrude. It just waits for you to ask, and that's part of prayer.
Norma Jean, give us a closing thought.
Okay, well, I would love to have your listeners know what I wrote for the second part of my introduction, so let's close with that. Here we go. Every culture and religious tradition possesses its own unique approach to prayer, but I believe the human heart transcends any differences expressed in our various global spiritual practices. The words and photographs contained in this book have universal appeal and are intended to speak to various concerns of our shared human condition. Feel free to close your eyes and open the book at random, or read it from beginning to end. Choose one bite-sized prayer each day, or perhaps memorize one that has special meaning for you. Prayer is prayer. It doesn't really matter what words you utter. What matters is that you pray with your whole being. Only when you feel what you're feeling are you fully present. That's when you can truly be still and know the one true presence. My deepest desire is that you will find a kernel or morsel of truth to keep you moving forward on the path of your spiritual journey. Know that you are not alone and that you are deeply loved. Every breath I take is a prayer. So may it be for you.
The title of the book, Bite-Sized Prayers, Non-Denominational Morsels to Feed Your Soul, the author, Norma Jean Strickland. Norma Jean, tell us how to get your book.
The book is available right now from BalboaPress.com. And so you can just go to their bookstore online and enter the title, Bite-Sized Prayers. Or if your listeners have other online retailers that they prefer, like Amazon or Barnes & Noble, it's also available at their respective websites as well. So it's ready, and I'm ready.
Well, that is true, Norma Jean. Thanks for being with us on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to everyone by Balboa Press. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. Bye.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Want to be challenged in a powerful way to leap beyond what you think is possible? Then join us Mondays for the Leah Jansen Show, every Monday at 10 a.m., 9 a.m. Central on TogiNet.com with Leah Jansen. Listen live as life coach Leah uses her coaching skills to give you the tools you need to take action and create momentum. You are encouraged to call in and share your greatest fears, challenges, and obstacles, and then listen as Leah obliterates those barriers to success. For more on Leah and the show, check out her website, leahjansen.com. That's Leah, LEAHJANTZEN.com. Spend 1 hour with Leah, and you'll be captivated by her energy, enthusiasm, and magnetism. You'll quickly become addicted to her positive attitude and make-it-happen mentality. Ready for a life-changing, mood-altering show? Then get ready for Leah Jansen and listen live to The Leah Jansen Show every Monday morning at 10 a.m., 9 a.m. Central on TogiNet.com.
People think I've made it. I'm popular. I seem happy all the time. I have great clothes and I'm involved in everything. But I have questions, doubts, and fears, just like every other teenager. That's why I'm glad for Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com.
The choices we have to make that can alter the course of our lives. Life is too much pressure if we try to go it alone. I tune in to Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell every week to get reminded that I'm not alone. Nicole Odell is an expert on what happens in the lives of teenagers. Join her as she deals with topics like peer pressure, purity, drugs, alcohol, and many other things that might come up along the way. She writes books and speaks to people all over the place, but she says her favorite moments are when she can pull up a chair and chat with teens about what's important to us.
For more information on Nicole and her books, go to NicoleOdell.com. Then join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com.
Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Afterburn, the K.C. Kopaska Story, a story of tragedy, redemption, and transformation. And the author is K.C. Kopaska and Carol Liston. And K.C. joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Westbow Press. Hello, K.C.
Hi there.
Well, it's great to meet you, and everyone is going to be inspired by the time they've listened to this whole interview of what how your life changed because of a huge, beyond comprehension for most of us, accident. Back, when was it,
1976.
1976, 35 years ago, and basically, I guess the best way to talk about this accident, you were in a Jeep and it caught fire and your clothes were all doused with gasoline and you caught fire, and I just want to read this short paragraph that'll kind of set the tone for how your life changed. You say this in your book, "I was immersed in a hellish, catastrophic eruption as fierce as vengeance. For a moment, my entire world was defined by fire. As bright orange flames engulfed the inside of the Jeep, out of the instinct, I yelled, 'Jump!' and I hurled myself out of the inferno as the Jeep hit the ground on the other side of the fence. It was too late." And of course, the Jeep, you got away from the Jeep, but you couldn't get away from the fire, and it completely, how much of your body did it burn?
60%.
60%.
And, yeah, and all that was third degree.
Third degree burn, 60% of your body. Of course, your face was completely burned off.
Pretty much. Even as, you know, the cartilage of my nose and ears was burned as well as the skin on my face. So, yeah, my face got cooked up pretty good.
And your hands?
They really took a lot of the brunt of the injury. And I was using those to cover my face, and yet my face still got burned. So kind of illustrates just how intense the heat was.
Right. So, and in that moment, too, you talk about in your book that when you were engulfed with flame, you couldn't get rid of the fire. You kept rolling, hoping that the fire would go out. And unfortunately, it was a dry field, and it caught fire. And so you were kind of making fire and rolling in fire. And it's just beyond trying to visualize this. Visualize this is so overwhelming for the reader. But you heard, when you were about to give in and just die, you heard a voice.
Yeah, I had finally gotten frustrated. I couldn't get the fire to go out, and it wasn't going to until the fuel was gone, which, unfortunately, I was part of that fuel. And so I stood up, thought I would engulf the fire that was burning me up and kill myself, and at that point passed out. As I came to, the only thing I felt was just an indescribable peace, and I laid there on the ground in that state of peace for a little while when a very quiet voice spoke to me, inwardly. It wasn't something that I heard audibly from outside, and simply said, everything's going to be all right.
Well, that statement, everything's going to be all right, meant you were going to live. And, of course, your whole story is, your book is the rest of the story after this accident and what you have become and what you do for others, and we'll get into that. But you still had to get help. I guess that must have been something when those two boys saw you knocking on the door of that house, and here's two young boys, and you must have been quite a scene.
I don't know what was going through their minds, but I kind of halfway think that they witnessed the fire, because it took them so long to answer the door. And I was actually in the process of kicking in the screen door. I was going to get in the house one way or another. When they finally, one of them opened up the inside door and let me in. And at that point, I proceeded to ask them to call an ambulance and get us help.
Right.
They called the fire department, which was the next best thing. The fire department probably would have come out first anyway.
Right. Now, your friend in the Jeep, did he survive?
No, he died shortly after the accident. And I'm not really sure as to how long he lived. It might have been a few days. In one place I read in a deposition that he died the day after the accident, so I don't know, but he didn't live very long.
Well, give us some, here's this accident in 1976, and now you've decided to live, you've been renewed, you said this spiritual experience, the first one, because before that, you were pretty much, anything goes kind of a guy, right?
Pretty much. I lived my own life, did what I wanted to do, regardless of the consequences. Didn't fear the law. And, that has its own negative effects on a person. But
you thought you were pretty tough.
Oh, I thought I was
pretty cool, right? Pretty cool guy.
God.
Yeah,
yeah.
You were in great shape physically. You were a boozer. Did you take drugs?
Yeah, before the accident and after, I did a lot of drugs.
Yeah,
and just an extreme amount of drinking.
So when did you have this second spiritual experience that really changed you, put you on this road that you've been on ever since?
Well, that came about really as a result of my lifestyle in many ways. After the accident, I had a lot of time on my hands. I had access to considerable funds, and I just partied like crazy day and night. And got to the point where I woke up one day and realized that every day I got out of bed, drugs and alcohol were going to tell me how I was going to live my life. And I got very depressed with that thought. And unfortunately, instead of getting help, I did more drugs and booze, which simply got me more depressed. And so I ended up in a vicious self-destructive cycle. Got so far out of control that I finally was just taken to a psychiatric hospital. They didn't even bother to take me to a substance abuse recovery facility. They just took me to a psych ward. And but in there, I remembered that I had been given a Bible when I was a little kid. So I asked for that Bible. And one night I was sitting up in bed in that psychiatric hospital reading it, and just began to become overcome with an intense desire to just want to be with Jesus. I don't know how else to explain it. But not in the sense of dying and going to heaven, but I just wanted him and nothing else in my life. So after sitting there and going through a mental list of all the things I'd tried to make myself happy, the drugs and the alcohol, girls, all that stuff, realizing how much it had all failed, I knew that I only had one last shot at having a life, and that was that was the Lord. So I got out of bed and got on my knees and prayed a real simple prayer. I just simply prayed, Jesus, I just want you. And went back to bed, and when I woke up the next day, I knew my life was radically changed. So I got out of that hospital and had no desire to do any kind of drugs or alcohol. Didn't want to hang around with my old party buddies, not even my family members, because they were all into that stuff. And wholeheartedly gave myself over to the Lord.
Well, you say it's your purpose in sharing this story to inspire all who have endured life's traumas with a message of hope and the secrets to overcoming all the curveballs life can pitch your way. You certainly had a fastball faster than the speed of sound change your life. And so what was one of the first things when you discovered that you could help people? What happened that you all of a sudden knew that you could be an inspiration to others?
Well, that was kind of a process. And what happened right after I became a Christian was that people began to ask me to share my story. And as I shared my story, I discovered several things. One, that it was helping me to heal and deal with my life adversities. And the other was that my story actually helped other people deal with their trials. So it really just became a natural thing to do, was to use my life to inspire others to handle their curveballs.
How did you meet your wife?
Well, I as soon as I gave my heart to the Lord, I knew that I wanted to do something for Him. I didn't know what that meant. I didn't realize I had a call to full-time ministry because I was just as green as could be. And so I kept bugging people at church about doing something for God. And finally, they got tired of it, and somebody told me if I wanted to do something for the Lord, I had to go to Bible college. I didn't want to go to college, but I knew that that's what I was supposed to do. So I went to a little college called Open Bible College in Des Moines, Iowa. And Diane was a junior by that point. She was attending there, and met her. We started dating, and it wasn't more than 2 weeks after our first date that we both knew we were supposed to be married to one another. So we didn't get married right away. I wanted to get her through school first, but met her at good old Bible college.
Now, you feel very drawn to Native Americans. Why is that?
You know, I can't tell you why. During my senior year in Bible college, I just felt an urge from the Lord, I suppose I could say it that way, to further my education. So I went to the Assemblies of God Seminary and ended up getting a Master of Arts and a Master of Divinity degree, really not knowing why. And until toward the end of my Master of Divinity studies, my father-in-law got around to telling me about a little Native American Bible college that he had supported for years. And when he mentioned that Bible college, the lights came on, and I knew that's what I was supposed to do, was go work with Native Americans, and more specifically, be an instructor at the college. So my call didn't come in any great, epiphany or something like that. It was just him mentioning that little college, and that was enough. And we've stuck with it for over 20 years now. I'm not teaching anymore, but we've done a lot of different types of ministry among Native Americans.
Answer this question. Do you believe that there is a purpose for every trial that a person may endure?
Yeah, I do. And not that that purpose is easy to discover. Some trials are just so extreme. There's things that I cannot relate to. I can't relate to a child being molested or abused or some of those really extremely destructive things, emotionally destructive things, but still in all of that, you know, some of the greatest movements in America have come about because of trials. One that I can think of is Mothers Against Drunk Drivers. That was created by a woman who lost her son to a drunk driver. And cancer, there's a lot of different cancer events that go on because somebody lost a loved one to that disease. And so there's a purpose to all of that, but you have to be willing to search for it. I have the benefit of knowing the Lord, so I can trust Him with my pain and ask Him to find a purpose for it, help me find a purpose, which He has done. And, you know, even going back to something as catastrophic as 9/11, a lot of people question God with that terrorist event. You know, if God is so good, why did this happen, and so forth. And yet, even in that, there's a purpose for that kind of loss and destruction, or a purpose that can be found in it. Now, what that is up to each individual.
Yeah, it's what we decide. Our decisions really decide our life every day, right? How we choose to do what we do, think what we think.
Yeah, and a lot of it's a matter of attitude.
Because everybody has
that purpose.
Because everybody has bad days. You know, you've had this incredible change in your life, but you still have bad days.
Well, I do, and a lot of my ministry is dealing with other people's bad days, not only working with Native Americans, who literally are the most impoverished people in America, but also as a fire chaplain. I've got to deal with people right in the midst of their most profound crises. And some of that process of finding purpose starts almost immediately. But, you know, if you have an attitude like I had before I found Christ of, you know, poor me, it's, nobody understands, it's, you know, feeling sorry for myself, you're not going to get anywhere with that stuff. And but a lot of times, the pain is so profound that it just takes an incredible leap of faith to even dare to find a purpose.
But it is possible. You're proof. You are living proof that all that is possible.
It's possible. I definitely believe that. I also believe that even when it seems like all hope is lost, that deep inside, hope is still resident. Might have to dig real deep to find it.
But it's there.
And I say that based on the fact that God is bigger than all of our problems. And if we can learn to rely on Him in the midst of our suffering and pain and loss, then we can find that purpose. Now, you can do it without Him, but it just won't have the same results, I don't believe.
The title of the book, Afterburn: The Casey Kopaska Story, a story of tragedy, redemption, and transformation. And the authors are Casey Kopaska and Carol Liston. Casey, tell us how to get your book.
Well, there's quite a few ways. You can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Kindle. You can order it directly from me. Normally, if I do that, I'll sign a copy for those that order the book from me. And it's starting to show up in different bookstores, especially Bible bookstores. So I also have a website you can order it from, and the name of that website is thecaseykopaskastory.com.
Yeah, that's K-C-K-O-P-A-S-K-A story.com. Well, Casey, yeah, we really appreciate you sharing with us this incredible story, your story, and we thank you for being on Indie Book Publishing. This interview brought to everyone by Westbow Press. Thank you, Casey.
Well, thank you.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.